Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
I want to start with you with the NFL. And, you know, we may have to flesh this out further a little bit later on, but I was watching Jets Cowboys. And here's what should have been the story for me as I'm watching Jets Cowboys. And I was held captive in a house where there was no red zone. And thankfully, Jets Cowboys was a tremendously compelling game. And I got to actually focus on one game for a while. That was fun. But here's what I should have been focused on is the fact that it was a tremendous moment. The Cowboys driving to try and tie the game with a touchdown and two-point conversion. About 3.5 minutes left. And the clock management was fascinating. Neither team calling timeout, allowing the final drive to define the game. They each had 3 timeouts, but they didn't care. It's like, no, let's not call them. Because the Cowboys wanted to grind the clock down, and after a while, the Jets were like, you know what? I think we're going to stop them. And then when it was obvious that the Cowboys were probably going to go in for a touchdown when they were on the two, the Cowboys were the one that stupidly called a timeout instead of forcing the Jets to call them. But, you know, we should have been talking about that. I should have been thinking about how Greg Williams dialed up a safety blitz up the middle with Jamal Adams on that two-point conversion that failed, saving that specific blitz call with his best player. And Jamal Adams is a beast. His best player for that huge moment. Should have been thinking about that. But no. I was looking at 6 flags on 6 consecutive plays. Insane. And that's the one. Even before this stuff last night with the hands to the face on the Lions twice that shouldn't have been called, it was that play. I was prepared to come in here and talk about it because the refs, what happened was they couldn't get out of the game. They couldn't get out of their own way. There was a pass interference on the Jets. It was borderline, but I suppose it could have been called. Okay. There was an illegal contact penalty then on the Jets. Borderline, but it made sense to be called. Cowboys didn't accept it because Zeke Elliott had a play. Then there was another pass interference which went down to the Jets 12. 3 in a row on the Jets, and they were all either borderline or should not have been called. And then 3 straight penalties on the Cowboys because there were makeups. First, there was a hold on Connor Williams. Then Michael Gallup was called for an illegal block on a pick play, which was a terrible call, I thought. Terrible call. But maybe they were trying to do a makeup. That's what it felt like, is that they had gotten themselves involved and then thought that they needed to keep being involved to balance the scales. And before you know it, they've called 6 penalties on 6 straight plays and completely destroyed the flow of a very entertaining product. It's a damn shame. But what we have here is the psychology of human beings. And as long as human beings are involved here, it's going to be an issue, and we're always going to end up talking about it. I've been in conversations like this in sports radio for 25 years. Seriously. We'll talk about it a bit later on. I have some thoughts on it. And also want to talk some Cubs as it relates to the Nationals, who, if you're not watching, they're just so damn good. And they have been good for a long while this year, before and in and then after that wild card win. But what makes them special, we'll talk about it a little bit later on. Casey Johnson coming up next on the Bulls and Joe Buck at 1 o'clock. I'm Spiegs in for Lawrence Holmes. Happy to be here. Top of the hour, by the way, was brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join Northwestern Basketball at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Home opponents include Michigan State, Michigan, and Illinois. Season tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at NUSports.com. And this hour, The Score is brought to you by Sunrise Chevrolet in Glendale Heights, the bright way to buy. Spiegs in for Lawrence. Back in a moment with you on 670 The Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm just tired of people talking about my defense. You know, I've always been a good all-ball defender, but, you know, there's no reason, you know, I can be this good offensively and not be that good on the defensive end. So taking more pride in it, and, you know, I'm pretty sure it'll show, you know, so I'll make sure of that.
That is Zach LaVine taking pride in his defense, dropping curse words so you know he's serious. The music you're listening to is a band called Big Thief. Casey Johnson is better at knowing things about the Bulls and better at knowing things about current music. It's true. Casey, I bow to you as we bring you in on the... On the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Hi, Casey Johnson of NBC Sports Chicago. I liked the Big Thief that you had me listen to before the show. Thank you for
that. They're in town Friday if you want to try to snag a ticket, man.
Well, I don't know. I have a child and a wife and a life, and going out is hard, Casey. You know that it's true.
It's just down the street at Metro. Come on, man.
All right, well, that's the place. That is the place. Thank you for that. I realized something the other night. I think that my overall depression about the state of the Bulls organization that has been around for so many years now is clouding me from seeing something and experiencing some joy here, because I believe that if we can sort of divorce ourselves from the huge unsolvable issue right now, at least, of not having a true superstar, and we all know we've talked about that so much. And if we know that maybe means a championship this year is extremely unlikely. Like, if we could divorce ourselves from that, I think this could be a very fun season of a team headed in the direction of winning, in which they may even make the playoffs. It seems like it's sizing up that way. Is that fair?
Yeah, and Zach LaVine might have some profanity for you about no true superstar. So look out there.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a lot of positive trends showing with this team. Obviously, they've got an incredibly long way to go. We're still talking about a 22-win team that needs to prove that they can extend these positive trends into the regular season and stay healthy and continue playing a more modern style of NBA basketball that they've been showing. And, you know, some people have to still prove things on the court. I mean, I just had a piece posted to NBC Sports Chicago that talked about how, for all the positive stuff talked about Wendell Carter, I mean, he still hasn't been on the court very much. 44 games last season, only a half so far in this preseason, because he's had nagging injuries and he's battled foul trouble. So everybody raves about Wendell Carter Jr.'s potential. Now we need to see some production, but I think that's fair. Your overarching theme is fair. I think this is a team that's poised to make a jump. How big of one will depend on a lot of things, and the biggest one that you always have to come back to with this organization is health.
Yeah, you know, I just don't want to deny myself, and I don't want people to deny themselves the joy of seeing a team maybe figure a couple things out, because that's a simple enough pleasure that I think we've got a chance to see. I'm looking forward to watching Kobe White as the two guard with the second team while he learns the league. That's pretty much the plan, right?
Yeah, that is the plan, and if you just watch him in preseason, I mean, you know, he seems allergic to passing at times, so I don't really consider him a point guard at all, but that's fine. It sounds like I'm being critical of him. I'm not being critical, because he's got incredible confidence and fearlessness and speed and athleticism, and his shooting ability that was not present in summer league is starting to show itself. I mean, he's just got too much talent not to be on the court. So just throw him out there and let him run wild. And you know, a big thing that really, to me, has jumped out beyond the numbers of the three-point attempts that's easy to look at is just the commitment this team is making to running. And Jim Boylan has talked about that consistently with his multi-ball handler system is, you know, a lot of teams are used to having the point guard, you know, either get the rebound and bring it up or, you know, spray out for an outlet pass and then bring the ball up. He wants basically whoever gets the rebound, unless it's the five, to push the ball up. And everybody else has got to commit to running the floor because that's the way you extend the defense, stretch the defense, flatten the defense. So you have, you know, secondary offense if you don't get something in transition. And I've seen them be pretty consistent at that to this point in the preseason.
You know, Kobe White is a scorer. He was a scorer in high school, as a high school coach. Like, that's just what they had him do. At Carolina they did. So I love this, as you say, just like put him out there and let him go wild because – I mean, just be what you are. Be the best version of what you are. We don't have to try to force him into any kind of peg these days because a scoring lead guard is a damn valuable thing in this league. Eventually, you'll have to figure out who can play next to him and what he has to do, but that would be a valuable thing in and of itself.
Exactly, and particularly if Chris Dunn, which is going to happen, is going to be the point guard in that second unit. And that's another thing is that, you know, Chris Dunn is better with the ball, so Kobe can play off of it. But you've got, you know, another word you've heard or theme you've heard Jim Boylan talk about is, you know, redundancy and versatility. So he wants people that can play on the ball, off the ball, play one, two, three. Satoransky can play one, two, or three. Levine can play on the ball or off the ball. Kobe White can play on the ball or off the ball. Dunn is better with the ball in his hands, and I think it's pretty clear he's got a role shaping up with that second unit. And, you know, we haven't talked much about the defensive end, which is where this team, to me, still has a lot of question marks. But, you know, Dunn's defense can be an important element for this team because you don't have a lot of defensive-minded players. So, you know, I think that White and Dunn in that second unit can form some chemistry and learn to play off each other, and there can be some potential there.
Casey Johnson from NBC Sports Chicago. Yeah, Wendell Carter, complete afterthought in my thought process. So I'll be reading the piece you just put up at NBCSportsChicago.com as I ask you about two other guys. Who's more likely to take a big step and become an all-star, Zach LaVine or Lauri Markkanen?
I think it's clearly going to be Zach LaVine. I mean, anyone who's been around him you know, has seen the edge that he's had since he's got here this year. And, you know, I was a pretty big Zach defender last season because I so often, you know, criticism would cross my sphere via email, Twitter, what have you, you know, that he was an empty calories kind of player and an empty words kind of guy. And I always defended him because I'm around him. And I'm not saying he's a perfect player, but I know the work that he puts into the game. I know his care factor. And if you spend time around him, you feel that as well. And I know the organization believes that in him as well. And, you know, look, Jim Boylan deserves a little bit of credit here because when Jim Boylan took over for Fred Hoiberg, Jim Boylan challenged Zach LaVine right to his face and said, you need to be a better two-way player. With your athleticism, there's no reason for you to be a minus defender. And, you know, Zach, I thought, made some small strides towards the end of last season defensively, but you can see a much more improved commitment at that level this year. And then, look, it's just lining up. If you look at his numbers last year, they were very similar. They were very similar to Kemba Walker's. And I remember sitting with him in Charlotte at a shoot-around right after the All-Star game, and he was the one who raised that point to me. And he said, basically, he's like, you know, I think Kemba got in because we're a 22-win team, or at that point headed to a 22-win team, and because the All-Star game's in Charlotte. You know, he's got the home court advantage part. if they win more and his numbers are similar, I don't think there's any question that Zach LaVine's going to be an All-Star this year.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Northwestern Football at Ryan Field this fall when the Wildcats, led by Big Ten Coach of the Year Pat Fitzgerald, host Ohio State, Iowa, Purdue, and Minnesota in Big Ten play. Single game tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at NUSports.com. All right. So you mentioned giving Jim Boylan credit. Here I come. Because, man, this quote from just, I think it was from today's media scrum where he gave context to the mid-range game thing with Zach LaVine, like what kind of twos they want, is beautiful. It's so entirely sensible, as opposed to the way it was kind of thrown out there to titillate and provoke by Joe Cowley. I know that's weird to think about, Joe throwing something out there like that, KC, the other day. But this Boylan stuff is like, we don't want to take contested twos mid-clock. I don't want mid-clock contested twos, okay? I'd like to not take early clock non-rim twos. I'd like not to, but if they happen, they happen. And it goes on. I tweeted it. It makes all the sense in the world. He references Tony Parker, who was a really good mid-range two shooter that he had in San Antonio when he was there. Like, you don't force these guys out of it, but you try to coach them to the math, is what he said. You coach to the math. This looks really sensible from Boylan to me.
Yeah, and I mean, that was actually from yesterday because the Bulls are off today. But
okay, thank you.
What I'll say is, you know, look, it's pretty clear that Jim drew a lot of widespread criticism, not only locally but nationally, for, you know, some of the things he said when he first took over last year. Again, anyone who was around that team knew what he was trying to do, and he was trying to tear it down to the studs, build it back up from the foundation. And the biggest thing he was also doing is he was playing to his personnel. Who did he have as, you know, who was a great in-transition three-point shooter last year? I mean, Zach and Lowry obviously need to shoot threes, but, you know, by down the stretch of the season, nobody's shooting three-pointers. I mean, they were playing G League lineups. So he said he was going to do this. He's been following what he said he was going to do all along. And as far as the mid-range, he's never said he doesn't want Zach LaVine taking mid-range shots. What he has said is exactly what you just said. He doesn't want Zach LaVine taking either contested mid-range shots or early clock mid-range shots. If Zach LaVine's got an open mid-range shot, you know, with 10 seconds left from the clock, bam, that's going up. I mean, he's going to make that more often than he's not. But look, they made a commitment to either getting to the rim or shooting threes. Mid-range is a secondary approach, and that's just the way that the NBA is played now. So you've got the personnel to play a more modern style NBA offense, and they've got more depth. So offensively, I think you're going to see this team make a pretty big jump this season.
In terms of what Jim was trying to do last year, how much of it was just trying to be not Fred Hoiberg? We see this in so many other sports. I mean, Robin Ventura was very effective when he wasn't Ozzie Guillen for those first 4 or 5 months of his run. You know what I mean? It's like you got to establish that you are a different kind of personality.
Well, what's funny about that, Matt, is that, I mean, if you look at it right now, he's basically playing and talking about playing the way Fred did all along. In fact, I wonder what Fred Hoiberg is thinking about all this right now, because, you know, the Bulls have the personnel to finally play hoi ball, so to speak. And that's what's funny. But as far as what happened last year, I mean, now we're going back in time, and I know I was the one who first raised it. But, you know, Jim had to be true to himself and who he is. And who he is a guy who's going to challenge guys without being combative. He's going to push guys without being punitive. And he wanted to lay down the law. And look, the other thing that got lost in that, and you know, you mentioned Joe Cowley. Joe Cowley and I reported this and talked about this all the time. And I'm sure, you know, Darnell and other beat guys did too. He had pre-existing relationships with all these guys. Nothing that happened last year was surprising to anybody. Obviously, the Sunday practice and the two meetings drew national headlines, and rightfully so. I reported that to the nth degree. But that was one or two people who he didn't have strong relationships with. You know, by the end of the season, it was clear that Zach was looking at Jim incredibly favorably, and that relationship has only continued to blossom, including a beautiful little Bahamas trip this offseason as Jim made his rounds. So, you know, there's going to be, again, there'll be some bumps in the season. Every pro team has them. Every NBA team in particular seems to have them. We'll be writing some crazy news story at some point this season. But for the most part, Jim had a philosophy and a mission, and he's stayed true to it, and he's playing the way he said all along he was going to play. What was it? We're going to learn to crawl and then walk and then run? Well, they're running now. So here we go.
A couple more quickies for Casey Johnson, who's been very giving with his time on a Bulls off day. When people tune in a week from tomorrow for the season to start, they may not have watched a lot of preseason or listened as they should here on the Score. What are they going to see with the starting point guard? They're going to be like, where's Chris Dunn? Where's Kobe White? Tell them what they're getting with Satoransky.
Just a real smart player. I mean, if you just watch him once, he's just he's got a knack for the ball. He gets loose balls. He's maybe not an elite one-on-one defender, but a solid team defender. Distributes the ball on time, on target. Obviously a very solid three-point shooter. Just makes the right play. And also a low usage guy. Doesn't need the ball in his hands a lot to be effective. So really a nice off-season acquisition. Fits Lowry and Zach's game incredibly well because, you know, he'll take pressure off them defensively without dominating the ball, and that's a good thing for the Bulls.
And then back to the big picture. If they get decent, is the dream that you build an attractive nest for a free agent still, or maybe find that superstar who wants to be traded, go get him for a season like Kawhi Leonard did in Toronto, maybe that kind of thing to put a final piece in place?
Yes, an overarching wide spread, yes. I mean, but you know, to all those scenarios, sure, you got to be have the antenna up for all those scenarios, but also you're hoping that one, if not two of your own, become those all-stars in Zach and Lowry. So, you know, their position, obviously, like they usually are with financial flexibility moving forward, and they're hoping that they get internal improvement. So, yeah, I think you'll see a nice jump. I still don't see them as a playoff team. Some people do. I've been wrong many times before, but I think you'll see a nice jump, you know, 14, 15, 16 wins this season from last season, and then you see where you are with other opportunities as they present themselves.
KC, thank you so much, man. I know it's a tough time for you. Condolences on the passing of your mom. I loved what you wrote about her on the socials, and my best to your family, and thanks for your friendship and your time, as always.
Well, I just want to say one quick thing, and thank you for that very much. I just want to, I have a small public forum, I just want to say everyone's been incredibly nice and generous to our family, and it's incredibly appreciated. I will say one last thing. My mom was a huge sports fan, and she was also a let's move on with it kind of person. So right now my mom would be channeling her inner Harry Carey and saying, what about the manager? So I'll just leave you with that. And thank you very much,
Matt. Okay. All right. Well, it's probably going to be David Ross. Okay.
Okay. I'll tell her.
Yeah.
I'll tell her tonight when I say a prayer to her.
Yeah. You pass it on. Either the prayer or the Ouija board, whatever works, but you pass that on. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Matt. I appreciate it.
Thanks, KC.
Take care.
All right. You too. That's at KCJ Hoop, KC Johnson of NBC Sports Chicago. What about the manager? What about the pitching? Is the way Harry used to say it. And George Hoffman used to pretend to say it. It's 670 The Score. I am not Lawrence Holmes. I am Matt Spiegel, and I'm here with you until 2 o'clock. Joe Buck from Fox Sports coming up next hour. Akeem Hicks has been placed on injured reserve. Alex Barr is promoted to the roster. Guys, is that injured reserve designated to possibly return? Because they
don't have to designate ahead of time now.
We don't have to designate now. Okay, because there used to be the two different lists. So
I think Matt Nagy brought up that there'd be at least a possibility he could come back, but wouldn't commit to that if they decided to go that route.
All right, that's the way the players have been saying it. Eddie Jackson on the station this morning said they hope to get Akeem Hicks back by the end of the year and for the playoffs. He's good, and you'd really like to have him. Especially in a year where it appears your defense is going to have to carry you as much as it did last year. But so there's your IR news for Akeem Hicks. 2 days in a row, Kyle Long and Akeem Hicks. A night after two teams in your division, or a day after two teams in your division, looked pretty good. Pretty damn good, I thought. Impressed by the Lions, I was last night, as I was with them against Kansas City a few weeks back. It's Matt Spiegel in for Lawrence Holmes right here on 670 The Score. The new sports book at Ameristar East Chicago is all the action, real-time odds, and the best prop bets. Plus, with fast 24-hour betting kiosks, there's no waiting. So grab the crew and come to the new sports book at Ameristar East Chicago. I want to talk with you guys about what appears to be an unsolvable problem. We'll do that next on The Score.
Illegal use of hands to the face, defense. Number 90. 5-yard penalty from the previous spot. First down, Green Bay.
Down and five. Rodgers, same side. And this time, it's in the hands of Lazard. Incredible play. 35-yard touchdown.
Alan Lazard, 6'5" frame, needing every bit of it, secures it. And here's pylon cam showing you the final moment.
The well-voiced Joe Tessitore. He's a satisfying listen. I gotta say, he just sounds like play-by-play. He's got some gravitas and some presence to the voice. It's very comfortable to listen to doing play-by-play. Unfortunately, then Booger McFarland is there. Although Booger had a couple of good moments last night ripping the refs on those absurd calls. I will give Booger credit. I think that's probably the most I've enjoyed him, certainly since he's been solo this year.
He's skewing Chris Webber for me, and I hate Chris Webber.
Really?
Chris Webber overtalks all the time and doesn't let the situation play out enough for me.
I'm alone at liking Chris Webber, I think.
I think so.
Maybe, yeah, you might be.
Right. I mean, maybe I'm buying what he's selling. And you are just simply not. And Jalen Rose and others would have you believe that Chris has been selling something for a long, long time, right? Rich kid trying to sell a certain cred and swag growing up. At least that was the knock, on Weber back in the day. Maybe he's still trying to sell you a personality instead of actually just being himself. I bought it. I find it kind of endearing. Maybe that says more about me than about you, but I'm going psychologically far too deep into the entire process. I'm clearly not Lawrence Holmes. I'm Matt Spiegel here on 670 The Score. All right, so anyway, Booger was pretty good talking about those calls last night, and they were brutal because a hand to the face is not a hand to the bottom of the collar. That is, the bottom of the collar is not attached to the face. There's several things in between. There's the middle and top of the collar. The entirety of the neck is in between.
Is this turning into like a lesson for Ruben?
The chin, I guess, is part of the face. So that would have been a fair call. The helmet is technically, for our purposes, part of the face. Okay. I'll give you the entire helmet. But not the collar. What are we doing here? Man, I have had conversations like these on this station, on national networks, with you, with others, for 25 years. I mean, I was a producer for the first 5 to 7 of those, but still, we've been bitching about the refs our entire lives, and we're still here bitching about the refs. And over the last 2 decades... there have been countless attempts to improve the officiating. I mean, think about it. Every year, think about it, the last 20 years alone, changing rules completely, thoroughly changing a rule, and then changing it back. And then also clarifying the wording of specific rules over and over and over again. They have added officials to the crews. They have expanded the officiating crew. They have restructured the placement of said officials. Right? They now evaluate every official on a weekly basis and theoretically hold them accountable for the quality of their work. Guys go up the rankings, down the rankings. The NFL tweets about plays, dissects video, sends out video about plays. They are trying to be, I believe, actually trying to be transparent in this way and talk about stuff and get it out there. There's more, even more progress. Instant effing replay. We added instant replay, people. And then every year that gets expanded, that gets tweaked, it evolves further, instant replay. Every year, they educate the players annually on the rules. They have symposiums where they'll bring in refs and talk to them. In person, they will go to training camps. Refs go to every training camp. The director of officiating goes to training camps. They talk about stuff. What else? I'm sure I'm missing several ways in which they have tried to improve the officiating. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. There, right now, the NFL has developed a regional network of officiating scouts, okay? They have a network of officiating scouts that canvasses the country in search of officials with the potential to advance to higher levels of football. Yes, that's from the NFL website. So they're scouting. They have a pool of 4,000 refs at all different levels that have been observed and evaluated and are entered into a database
there's a database of 4,000 refs. And the officiating scouts that the NFL has hired, they track the progress of these 4,000 candidates. And those who stand out earn opportunities to move up and officiate in higher levels of football. That implies that they're working with the college ranks. And obviously, they do work with guys once they reach the college ranks. But in terms of placement, that implies that they're in charge of the whole schmear, the whole thing. But it's not getting better. We're not better off. Are we better off in terms of the officiating than we were 20 years ago? How is this possible that we are not better off than we were 20 years ago with everything I just mentioned? And I'm sure a bunch of stuff that I'm not even thinking of.
I think it goes to your point. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, if we don't get that, I think that's the first hands to the face penalty that led to that Aaron Rodgers touchdown.
Yeah.
Which I thoroughly enjoyed.
As a viewer, I mean, as a consumer.
As a consumer, like, I'm put at an odds where, of course, I want them to get the calls right. But without that call,
yeah,
we don't get that magnificent throw by Aaron Rodgers for that touchdown.
Are you saying you're happy you're saying you're happy the call happened?
Yes. Because when I watch football,
oh, God.
I put entertainment as my number one thing, and then organization and, you know, getting the calls right kind of on the second pedal. Entertain me first, then we'll go over the rules later.
Problematic Tony Gill drink.
that takes us in an entirely different direction, Tone.
I think
you're
Boylan
saying
might have copyrighted that.
Yeah. Well, the conspiracy. So you're all for the conspiracy. Like, if those calls against the Jets, the first three were designed to help the Cowboys get down there so we could get a score and maybe get a 2-pointer. And like, you're all for that. And that's horrific and a dangerous place to go.
I mean, I'm a human. I have my faults and hypocrisies and stuff like that. But
yes.
Yeah, for Aaron Rodgers, in order to get that play, like one of the best throws probably of the season so far. Yeah, I'm good with that.
Well, here's the thing. The problem is, to me, is that we're not better off because this is the human factor. We're dealing with human beings who are making calls. And as long as human beings are involved, it doesn't matter what you do. You're going to end up with problems, and you're going to end up with people bitching. People are going to bitch. And the true little secret here, the true little secret that I think some people have realized, but I'm here to tell you and I can define more for you, is the NFL knows this. They know that there is absolutely no solution to this problem, and they are fine with that. They're totally fine with that. Because bitching at the refs is it feels good. There's a satisfaction to it. I want to expound on this, and I will. The NFL knows that you're angry, and they like it. They enjoy your anger. We'll expound on a little bit. We'll take your calls, too. 312-644-6767 on the solutionless problem of NFL officiating and whether it really is a problem or not from the NFL's perspective. 312-644-6767 is the number. 670-11 to get in via text. Let's talk. Joe Buck next hour as well on 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.